guilty minds, nor the hands that hold the chains. Silence is over.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
This week is a special week because we have an easy reminder of the long and valuable history of these lands, and indeed of our entire continent. Long before the slow and progressive colonization process, with all its myriad of terrible things that have become part of the history of our nation, our lands were inhabited by humble yet brilliant people who lived in perfect consonance with the world around them. Their legacy is evident in the well-known Native American philosophies and understandings of life and the world. It has never been easy anywhere in the world for people to assimilate to an overwhelming, seemingly undefeatable military force, and this has caused enormous pain and distress everywhere on the earth. The ages past were barbaric, cruel, and almost difficult to accept as things that actually happened. People who were humble, living with the land, in sisterhood and brotherhood with each other, and who never had the need or resources to develop advanced warring technologies, found themselves overburdened to the point of extinction. Here in America, during the 1800s and even well into the 20th century, specific policies were developed and carried out by a great number of governmental agencies. Many of these policies were clearly and openly designed to disempower indigenous people of everything that gave them sovereignty and self-sufficiency. The local indigenous languages and cultural expressions were made illegal, and this continued for many years, unchallenged by the federal government or the executive and judicial branches of government. Boarding schools were created, and many indigenous children were forcibly removed from their families in order to ensure that they would be assimilated into the standard English-American culture and customs. The amount of trauma many thousands of Native Americans have experienced is almost beyond the capacity to put into words. When the language and culture of people is denigrated and ignored to the point of making it illegal, that's when we can safely see things were taken too far. We have lived dark times in this world, but the spirit inside all of us has proven to be indestructible. Our bodies and minds can be easily damaged, but our spirit cannot be destroyed. This belief in the sacredness of life beyond what we can see has kept many indigenous people grounded on what they believe is right, and not only that, but on the best that their ancestral culture, knowledge, and philosophy can offer the world. Today, we live in a very different time. The work of countless activists, intellectuals, and even entrepreneurs has propelled our nation to a very different place. A place where we can see the errors made in ages past, and we can deflect them from occurring again with apparent ease. As a nation and a world, we are growing up. Western culture and interests are evolving to a point that many of us see as beneficial to all of us if we are able to use our massive resources to do what is right, and not only what corporate interests believe is right for them. We certainly have enormous challenges ahead, but many of us are certain that it is indeed possible to take action and fix many wrongs that are currently de facto running our entire world. We have a serious emergency situation with the way we interact with our environment. We see it every day in what we have named climate change, and this is a very real event that is taking place before our very eyes. In addition to that, we seem to have a tragic relationship with our fellow beings in the world, and more species are becoming closer to extinction. Butterflies, dragonflies, and bees are slowly but surely disappearing. Spectacular animals like the tiger are already considered endangered. The northern white rhino became extinct in 2018. The vaquita, the smallest cetacean in the world, is on the brink of extinction with an estimated of 20 individuals in the wild. And this is not to mention the devastating factory farm paradigm that we live in, where millions of cows, pigs, and chickens are treated like lifeless commodities in sterile and unnatural industrial facilities. This is far from the natural ways humans harvested animal flesh before industrialization, and it doesn't show the best that the human spirit can achieve. At times, after seeing so much disorder in the world, many wonder, are we actually going to make it? Or are we done for? Well, many of us are certain that yes, we are going to make it. Our world is going to make it. Our fellow beings are going to make it. We will not destroy the oceans. We will not destroy the world. We will find a way to organize to a point where we can make real decisions that can be of real benefit to people and nature. And all these superb changes that many of us foresee must be informed and inspired by indigenous wisdom, that ancient, deeply philosophical way of understanding how humans are supposed to behave with each other and our environment. We want to give a special shout out to Deb Haaland, the first Native American to serve as a cabinet secretary, as the Secretary of the Department of the Interior. This is a sign that we are on the right path, because what better person to manage the Department of the Interior than a Native American woman? Last November, Deb Haaland issued Secretary's Order 3404, which declared the word squaw to be a derogatory term and created a task force to identify its use in names of geographic features on federal lands and find replacements. This word has a long history of disempowering indigenous women. Stolen from the word for woman in one specific indigenous language, possibly Algonquian, the word has been distorted and turned into a powerful racial slur, able to remove individual identity and dignity from many women of Native American heritage. This has effectively denied the humanity of generations of Native wives, daughters, and mothers. In broad, traditional Native American culture, woman and mother are sacred beyond the limitations of our current age, and this must be remembered because it is crucial we accept woman and mother as the givers and sustainers of life, and must be honored with all our might. Now, let's celebrate Indigenous people's heritage with the thought that we can achieve amazing things in America if we dare to supplement our policies, actions, and goals with indigenous knowledge, philosophy, and wisdom.
From American Public Media, this is an APM documentary.
One thing about my education journey is that there are times where I have felt so alone. And alone in the sense that, like, I'm physically alone, but also mentally, emotionally, and as an Indigenous student, I've oftentimes felt so alone that, like, it is kind of scary. Like, being the only person in the classroom, like, there are times where, like, I have not seen someone who looked like myself in months.
You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries. I'm Neve Nez, and I've recorded that entry about my tough start in college. I'm Hopi and Navajo. I chose a majority white university far from home to study pre-med. All my life, I had to learn to navigate two worlds. It's extra work a lot of my classmates didn't have to worry about. America's education system isn't the same for Native students. We come with different histories. A lot of people don't know it, but education was actually used to erase our cultures, to stop our parents and grandparents from speaking our languages. Now we're learning to go to college on our own terms. We're finding ways to make our own use of a system built by the white people who took our lands. We're strengthening the ties to our native roots, and also creating ways to support our communities. We want the Native youth coming up after us to see that this can be done. So over the next hour, we'll tell you our stories. The first story comes from Ruben Quito Stately, a student at Augsburg University in Minneapolis. From his earliest memories, Ruben saw education as truth-seeking, filling in what was missing. Where were the stories of Native people in his history books? Ruben starts his story at a high school in St. Paul, Minnesota, where he's giving a presentation.
We are super excited to welcome everyone to SPA's first ever assembly in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day. We are thrilled to introduce our speaker, Ruben Quito Stately. His stage name is Quito. He is a 21-year-old recording artist from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and a college student currently attending Augsburg University.
Hamidakia B, Ruben Amakiapi, Gamaza Didi Hemie, Manija Ska, Washichuia, St. Paul, Imacha Kedo, Gawana, Shakpeo Tuen, Wati, Bredeshak, Aisanti, Hematahan, Damakota. That's how you say hello in Dakota. Totally kidding. All right. But if I'm going to come speak to you all, I need to speak to you all in my mother tongue, the Dakota language, the original language of the land that we're standing on, Manishota Makoche, we called it. For many, many, many years, thousands of years before anyone else was here. So anyway, that was my introduction. I told you I'm from the White Bluffs. And then I said, nowadays, in English, we call it St. Paul.
Putting rhymes on the page. I was 12 years young when we made Renegade. 13 years old, I was throwing shade. 14 years young in the street blowing haze. All this time I seen the world differently. Colors vividly, I'm using words for imagery.
I grew up in an urban place where a bunch of Native kids had long hair, and it wasn't uncommon for us to have long hair. We could joke and play and we could be ourselves, and it was me being surrounded by other boys that were just like me, being among my own people. I'm pretty sure it was like my first week in a public school, and I'm pretty sure I was 4, but I remember meeting a white student. He was the only white student in the class. He asked me, where are you from? And he thinks I'm Mexican, and I told him, oh, I'm not Mexican. I actually think this is the first time I ever had to specify who I was. And he says, well, if you're not Mexican, like, where are you from? And I said, I'm from here. I'm an American Indian. I'm a Dakota. And he laughed in my face, and he told me, there's no Indians left. They're all dead. So I remember my mom picking me up from school and me going home that day, and I asked her, looking out the car window, why do other people think that?
Well, I clearly remember that day. I knew that public schools were misinformed, and I knew the miseducation of other students about Indigenous history was prevalent. And at the time, we really didn't know, except to kind of avoid public education, how to change that narrative. And so since that moment of that little boy was kind of like a reminder, a trigger. Hey, this is the work that we have to do.
There were no trees here. Find a spot.
My mom, Ramona Quito Stately, made her career in Indian education.
So this is the Bidelke.
One day, she and I took a visitor from out of town to a place that's sacred to the Dakota people. It's called Barote. It's an island between two rivers in St. Paul.
This is the confluence of the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River. And we also refer to it as Makachokayaking, and that means the center of our universe, because this is our creation story.
The best teachers I ever met were my family members, my mother and my dad, and my grandfather, who took good care and nourished my headspace to become a Dakota thinker, speaker, and leader.
Ruben, did you want to share a song?
Yeah, so I have a song I usually share when people come here. It's good when people come here and they find some truth, and then, you know, they let the land tell a story, and then they let Dakotas tell the story. Because anywhere else, often it's not us telling our own story.
To a Dakota way of thinking and believing, everyone can be a teacher at any given time. That's why when people speak, we give them the floor. It doesn't matter if you're the oldest at the table, doesn't matter if you're the youngest at the table. All the people that I looked up to, they gave me the time, energy, and kind of space to be the leader sometimes or be the teacher sometimes. And what that did is it just strengthened that place for me to speak up and say what I felt like I needed to say. In this Western culture of teaching, there's one person in the room who gets to be the teacher the whole time. So I think there's a culture shock when we walk into a school. And I also think that teachers have been taught things in school. They could be totally uninformed about Native people or misinformed. So I had to be the student in the classroom in seventh grade where my teacher had a, and this is a non-white person, mind you. This is a non-white person, and they're teaching a history class, seventh grade history class, and they start talking about the Indian Removal Act, and they started talking about the white perspective and the Native perspective, and as my hand shot up, and I said, I don't think you know the Native perspective, and I don't think you should be teaching it. And she said, I have a degree, I have a master's degree in history. And I said, well, I know that white men wrote all those books, and you cannot tell the Native perspective. Like I told her, I said, you're doing a terrible job saying how Native people thought about the Indian Removal Act. And she sent me out in the hall for, I don't know what you'd call that, but insubordination of some kind or whatever. But I wasn't supposed to be the teacher at the time. I was supposed to be the student, and I was supposed to shut up and learn or whatever, you know. So my mom, my dad, and my grandpa, they didn't really raise me to be that way. They raised me to speak up when I know something, and so that's what I did. What kind of Native student does that? A normal Native student would take the shame and put the shame on themselves, even when they know better, which is crazy. Like, but basically, the weight of that scenario is on our shoulders. And for one moment, I put it on my teacher's shoulders, and she did not like it. She hated it.
This song is called Dear My Future Son. The sky's the limit, that's what they told a fool. Don't be surprised if that's what they tell you in school. The standard education will fail to reach you, and your teachers will probably fail to teach you. But they're gonna point at you for the blame. You'll interpret their failure as your own shame. Their curriculum will misrepresent you, and your society will probably not accept you. Sadly, that's just how it goes.
But I was very young, and my parents were talking about my future. And they just said very matter-of-fact, you're going to college. So I didn't question it. I was like, oh, I'm going to college? Cool. And I pictured it for a long time.
That was really the goal when we had children, was to prepare them to be native, but also to be able to navigate this white world. It's important. We can't ignore it. We have to be able to navigate jobs and owning property and all those things and be competitive. And we also have to acknowledge and understand our cultural lifeways.
I was pretty dead set on American Indian Studies. And that was by the time I was in 10th grade. I knew that American Indian Studies would help me fill in the gaps for all the times in which I don't understand colonization here in America. You know, how have Native people from all these different nations, hundreds of nations, how have we all become American? Or in what ways have we totally assimilated, but in what ways have we resisted? You know, like, there's so many things that I wanted to know, and I was hungry for it. So I said American Indian Studies, I'm like dead set on that. When it all came down to it, I have an amazing scholarship to come here to Augsburg. All right, we're live. So yeah, tell us about yourself, Eric. Tell us who you are.
I'm Eric Buffalohead. I'm from White Eagle, Oklahoma. I'm Ponca. And my job is being the chair of the American Indian Studies Department here at Augsburg University in Minneapolis.
So I think I'm just going to reverberate some questions that were asked of me. What could universities do to support Native students?
Part of the issue is, even today, even though it's, you know, 2022, there's a lot of Native students who are first time. That's their first person in their family to go to university or college. And so that's always a really tough experience because you don't have your parents' advice to fall back on. That's big. Native students are already facing the huge issue of having such a high dropout rate in high school that the number of them here is small to begin with. And then, you know, you run into the same problems, lack of role models and mentors. I mean, what do we have? Two Native employees at Augsburg now, or maybe only me. I don't even know. I think there might be two.
So what are some things that Native students bring to their universities that's invaluable?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that they're representatives of the 574 sovereign nations, and to other students, that's maybe the first time they've ever really been able to really understand what that means. Hey, we have this big United States, but there's 574 federally recognized tribes, and they're sovereign nations. We represent a really interesting worldview in that we are, whether we like it or not, a conquered people in our own land. I mean, we're almost like POWs in a way. We're in our own land, but, you know, maybe mainstream Americans need to understand, because I think they don't really grasp the idea of themselves being immigrants. Hey, you guys are foreigners here, you know, and we were here before you, and you really should, you know, grasp and understand the complexity of the relationship that has existed in the last 500 years for Native peoples. All of the traditions and everything has been kind of stifled down by policies of assimilation, and as we try to prop up as much of that culture as we can and embrace things like language and spirituality and just worldview in general, and having all these Native students around and the experiences they bring is really cool.
Alright. Can you read that to me?
For my whole education, I have known that whatever I learn here at Augsburg, I'm going to take back to my people. And the people of mine that I focus on are the young ones. I've got an internship at a Native charter school here in Minneapolis, Bedote Learning Center, teaching kindergartners.
In Washichu Iapi, what does that mean? We chalk
the center is a big star.
Yeah. The sun is a very big star. That's what we were saying.
They're at this age where you can spark their inspiration and tell them, hey, you could go to school further and you could learn the truth like I did. Even if you're not inspired by all the same things that I was, there's so many things that you could do. Like, maybe you're talented at something in school and you've never been given the space or time to flourish in that. College is a space where you do that, you know? And if you're in high school and you've only experienced high school, it's terrible, you know? You have, like, 7 classes a day. You're expected to be good at 7 things at the same time. Like, come on. Young people trying to go to college, I always tell them, you got like four classes, dude, and you're telling them what you want to learn. You're telling them what time of day you want to learn it, and it's way better. So I think that it's an act of resistance because in the end, whether we like it or not, this is a capitalist system, and the best way that we can support our people and ourselves and our families is to make money. And then also that degree, you could bring it back to your people and get a job for your tribe, or you know, maybe you can go to a non-native space and you can help create native space in somewhere new. To me, it's an act of resistance because you're able to indigenize new space, or you strengthen the space that your people are already in.
That's Ruben Quito Stately. Ruben graduated from Augsburg University in May of 2022. In his first year out of college, he'll be creating an album with Native youth in Minneapolis, exploring themes of wellness and drug prevention. I'm Neve Nez. You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries. Next up, we're going to hear from Archie Yellow. He's a student at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. It's in Cloquet in northern Minnesota, near the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation, where he's a member. Archie has an amazing story about taking a second run at college, and this time he's on fire to succeed.
Okay. Buju. Archie Indigenicas. Mukwan Dudanum. Nagaji Wanungan Dunjaba. Just a little easy saying, let me go through what I got done saying to y'all. I said, hello, Buzu. My name is Archie Indigenicas. Mukwan Dudanum. My clan is Mukwa. Nagaji Wanungan Dunjaba. I'm from Fond du Lac. Fond du Lac is where I'm from. Quick little introduction. Nothing crazy. The Ojibwe language. Some might know it as Chippewa. I was born in Minneapolis, 91, in Hennepin County, you know, right downtown Minneapolis. My family was living in the projects, but like most Native families and most Natives that lived in the cities, we bounced around, like, you know what I'm saying? I spent summers in the res, going to grandma's house. So I'm, in my family, I'm the oldest, and I have 7 siblings. 5 brothers and 2 sisters. Our ages range from, what, me, I'm 30, and the youngest is 15, 16. Me and my brothers, we all used to be, like, in this huge Native gang. It's probably, like, something everyone's heard of. Native mob. It's, like, huge Native gang in the cities all over Minnesota. Getting fast money and then, like, just living a fast life. That was, like, the goals and the lifestyle. I'm one of the blessed, lucky few that even were able to escape anything like that. I had a lot of homeboys that didn't even make it to 18. You know, I thought I was going to be in prison or just, you know, stuck in this loop of gangbanging, living that life. I thought that was going to be it. But something always told me that there was more. So my story, I want y'all to know, is like of me getting my life together for me and my family. And it happened. It worked. It really happened. My first experience at college, it wasn't a great one.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! Starting out? Well, Lake Superior College can prepare you to...
I went to Lake Superior College. This is like the first school I knew about, and it was a community college.
Lake Superior College offers training in a plethora of programs. From health
and I didn't know what to go for. I didn't even know, like, what you should do or nothing. It was just, like, total shoot in the dark. You know, I just went there, signed up. I think there was only, like, 2 other Natives that I knew. And those guys both left within the first few weeks. Yeah, so I did my math, writing. Took this one class that was really nice. It was titled, like, Finding Success in College or something like that. And it was the only class out of all the other three that I actually passed because I liked it. And I was the only one that I was interested in. Like, the stuff she talked about really hit me. Like, what you needed to succeed in school and just in life. She talked about having this foundation, like, you know what I'm saying, having a stable job, having a stable house, a stable life, and then you can move on, and then you can look at schooling, and then you can look at higher education. And I was completely blown away by how right she was, because I was completely, like, you know, say, not stable. I didn't have a good home, and I was couch surfing, going from homeboy's crib to homeboy's crib. So yeah, it was just really bad experience. I did not do too well my first time around in school. Then yeah, I moved down to the cities, and my dad helped me get a job moving furniture. That was a good paying job, you know, like 16, 17 an hour. I had a son like when I was 18, right, 19. But that didn't like do much to motivate me at the time. Because all people around me, they were off deadbeat dads too and having kids left and right. So that's all I saw, right? I missed out on my son the first part of his whole life. Something I'll never be able to get back. Then I had my twins, yo. And that's when it, like, all changed. Like, I was, like, 24, 25. I knew I didn't want to gangbang and stuff no more. But I knew, like, I couldn't do this, like, moving furniture stuff forever. And then me and that girl, Rick, weren't at all fit for parenting. My twins and she moved back to South Dakota. Go stay with her mom and her parents and her family so that, you know, saying it'd be easier living for her. So after my twins left, I knew if we got up north, closer to the res and stuff, like, they would help us out. Getting on the casino payroll, it's been a real good place to, like, get work. They've always had my back, and they've always gave me a job. The pandemic hit, so I knew I had to do something. So I said, all right, let's see if I can go back to school.
You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries, a documentary from American Public Media. We'll take a short break and then get back into Archie's story. At age 28, he decides to take a second shot at college and at making a new life.
I'm defying mad odds, you know. Look, I mean, I'm supposed to be here with all these guys on the res, walking around, you know, no life and no goals. That was me, man. I had nothing.
You can find portraits of the three of us on the APM Reports website, apmreports.org. You can also browse APM's entire archive of education documentaries. Support for this program comes from Lumina Foundation, the Spencer Foundation, and the Education Writers Association. More in a moment. This is APM, American Public Media. From American Public Media, this is an APM documentary, Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries. I'm Nevaeh Nez. Let's jump back into Archie Yellow's story. The COVID pandemic shut down the tribal casino where he had been working, so Archie decides to try college again. Archie washed out of community college when he tried it a decade before. This time, he enrolls at a tribal college. There are more than 30 tribal colleges across the country. Indian students who start out at a tribal college have a much better chance of finishing than if they go to a mainstream college right out of high school. Archie signed on.
I always wanted to go back to school, and I always knew if I went back to school, I was going to go back to school at Fond du Lac.
I'm Josh from Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. I'm the admissions officer. We have American Indian Studies.
First off, it was my resident school, so I had that going for it.
I think it's important to pick up all that we can from our past.
We want you to be who you want to be, and we'll do the best we can to help you see
our tribal flags are all hanging. Everywhere you go, like in there, there's like Native artwork laying around. So when you walk in there, it feels nice. I knew right away I wanted to go for Native American studies. I knew if I learned my language and my culture, that would just like open up mad doors. It would just, you know, put me down the right path. What day was it yesterday? Anin ga itchi gizigak bajinago. If I just like got in tune with my culture, got in tune with my language, learned it right. What is today? Anin ejigijiguk nungum. Being a teacher would be like my way to atone. I lived a horrible life. I did horrible things, and that's the whole thing I'm trying to do, like with this schooling and like becoming a teacher and heal my community. For all the like damage and like destruction I've done my whole life. We're going out to the res, place where I grew up, my grandma's house. They call it East Pine. This turns into res right here. Look at how messed up it is. See how that's all paved? That's there's white people stuff, then boom. Here we are. Right here, man. This is res and it turns into a dirt road. Yeah. But yeah, that used to be a blueberry fields. Right here is where I used to stay. At your teal drive. Right there, my grandma's house. When I think of education and like when I look at my honor roll, little certificates and stuff, I think of her. How that would make her feel. I feel like she's still watching over me because, man, I've had so many close calls and man, this is a crazy blessing that I'm here, you know, doing this and I'm here going to school. Shoot, man, I'm defying mad odds, you know. Look, I mean, I'm supposed to be here with all these guys on the res, walking around, no life and no goals. That was me, man. I had nothing. Drinking every day, you know. I saw that all the time. That's a major, like, you know what I'm saying, disease in our culture and our community. My dads and my grandpas were, you know what I'm saying, drunks, and that's all I saw was partying, you know? And then, like, I saw it, slowly saw it, like, trying to swallow my life and trying to swallow me. I can't wait to be a teacher here, though. So I could teach the youngins and teach the older ones. I want to be the old wise native. You know, I want to be that guy. Even though I'm not wise right now, you know. When I become super dope with all this and get acquainted with this, I want to go down to the cities and start getting them guys. Because those are the ones that are really lost. And man, I remember down there, I just always felt hopeless and lost. Like no one was going to come save me. I had no role models, you know. And there was no one I could look up to. There was no one there. I just hope that I can be that guy and become some hope for these kids out here. But yeah.
Buju migwe chapijigi pejaye goede nongom nin wagosh.
So Anton Choi is an Ojibwe professor at Bemidji State University. He's also been like a huge like language warrior in the Ojibwe community.
When they asked me to come and do a TED talk, nobody said anything about using a foreign language like English. In fact,
after like we read his book, like I just started reading all his stuff online and started like watching all his YouTubes.
And I'm speaking to you in Ojibwe, one of nearly 200 tribal languages still spoken in the United States, that somehow mine is the one that often ends up being thought of as foreign.
This is someone like I look up to, someone I look towards becoming. The main goal and dream of mine is to go to Bemidji State so I can go learn under Mr. Troy and take his classes. I haven't had much practice with the whole interviewing people, but I'm mad excited.
Hey there.
Bonjour.
Hey. How's it going?
It's going good. Well, come on in. Welcome. I kind of feel like I got one foot in a wigwam still and one sitting here in an ivory tower, but I really like living at home, you know?
Yeah. Man, since, like, I've started going to school, like, my whole life got, like, revived. Mm-hmm. And, like, I turned a whole new page. I always wondered if, like, it was even worth it. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Is this all effort going to be, like, you know what I'm saying, like, destroyed at the end because, like, of what I did in the past?
Well, there's no way to purge all the, like, negativity from the world. But what you can do is create a center for yourself, starting with your body, you know, your community, your circle, the people around you. And if you fill that full of light, love, and good things, then it pushes all that darkness out. It might be swirling around the edges. It'll be out in the world, but it doesn't have to be running your world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about the body, like Ni Yao, my body, and it's kind of like a cup. You know, it's temporary housing for our soul. And when you fill your cup up with good stuff, it pushes all the bad stuff out.
Yeah.
Every time you're learning a new word, a new song, a new whatever, you're filling it up with the good stuff, and it's pushing that bad stuff out. So it's hard to cure the whole dang world of all its ills and substance abuse and everything else, but you can recenter your own space, and it'll make all the difference.
I'm in college, learning my language and culture, and it's like, man, you know, it's just something I'm, like, proud to tell people. And what we thought going to school was, like, you know what I'm saying, was, like, getting whitewashed and, like, losing your culture, losing who you were. That's how I remember, like, feeling like how school was, why I never, like, felt like I succeeded at it. Being good in school meant, like, you're trying to be an apple, like, you're trying to be, like, red on outside but white on the inside, so you're trying to be somebody else. It just wasn't, like, what we represented as, like, we thought being Native was.
One of the things about colonization is that it's about taking one language, culture, religion, and using it to supplant all the other ones. And that's what education is. We're still doing colonization. We are still assimilating, colonizing, and indoctrinating people into that. And as a Native person, especially, like, a brown-skinned Native person, like, you will never be accepted as a white person. You will still be, like, hyper-visible, racially profiled, you know, mistrusted, downtrodden, less safe. Like, when they go to school, whiteness is the operating norm. 2% of the world's population is blonde, but, like, 90% of the beauty icons are blonde. We're told to worship that, you know? Like, it's weird. But when we get a chance to learn about ourselves, when it's okay being me in my body and then embrace and love who we are as Anishinaabeg, then, you know, we'll truly succeed. And I don't mean just succeed in terms of, like, getting a paper or credential. I mean succeed in having our best chance at a long, healthy, happy life.
Man, he was more, like, down to earth than I thought. It was very easy talking to him. And, like, how he talked about, like, yo, if you just fill your circle right, everything will be right. Yeah, he really, like, you know what I'm saying, reminded me that, like, yeah, if I, like, build this up right, I don't think nothing can come by and knock it down. I just gotta, like, believe in myself and believe in my work. It's crazy how far I've come with this and how far I'm going with this. I've gave the gang life at least 10 years of my life. So I figured, what if I gave schooling, higher education, my language and my culture, what if I gave them 10 years of my life? Where would I go? What would happen? My success at college is finally rubbing off on everyone else here, and, like, my two siblings are grad, three siblings actually. I forgot my brother Dennis is getting his GED, and he's, like, one test away from getting it. I think he has to do his math, which I'm helping him. My sister signed up for Fond du Lac school. I can't believe how happy that makes me. My brother, George, who I thought he was never going to go to school. And now he's finishing school and planning on going to college, too. Man, I tell my son all the time, like, yo, boy, I'm doing something big, yo, trying to make things happen for us. Something to, for you to be proud of, like, man, I just can't wait for that day to just say to my son, like, yo, your dad's a teacher. Man, those are stuff to think about.
That was Archie Yellow. He's a student at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College in Cloquet, Minnesota. You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries from APM. I'm Neve Nez, and now it's time to hear my story.
When I'm out running, I think a lot about my childhood. I spent a lot of time outside, and like any kind of typical res kid, I was always outside. Our parents encouraged us to be anywhere but indoors. And then eventually my mom would make us go running with her, and we would run as a family. At first I was not really about it. I thought it was hard. Like it definitely is something hard, and I think being a kid, like, you don't want to be forced to run. Like, you'd rather go play. But it was nice to have that pressure from my mom. And I think that's the biggest thing I think about when I'm going running. And I remember my mom always asked us, like, who are you running for today? Like, who needs more strength today? And Hopi, you're running for other people. You're making sure that you're keeping someone in mind. Running is a healing force, and I want to be able to tie healing that is present within our culture and apply that to my work as a doctor. My dream is to become an orthopedic surgeon in sports medicine and work with Native athletes around the nation. Okay, let's see. I'm just going to start by introducing myself. Net Josh Mesian Hopi Matua, Pionet Nevenez and Paham Matua, Nahanangwangwa, Not Hovela Epkipta, Net Flagstaff Epbukipta, Net University of Minnesota Rochester Epitukai, Itanga Monica Pulinga Maya Matua, Paitana Fernanda Nezia Matua, Itana Wapakios and Nawangwa, Tapa Umumi Pahan Noktanani. Hello, my name is Neve Nez. My Hopi name is Josh Macy, which actually means Bluebird Girl. I am Badger Clan, born for the Towering House people from the village of Hope Vela on Third Mesa in northeastern Arizona on the Hopi Reservation. And I'm currently a third year at the University of Minnesota Rochester. Honestly, I didn't even want to be a doctor. I didn't know what it took to be a doctor. I didn't even consider medical school. I thought medical school was beyond people like myself. In all honesty, I had no idea how to even get there. That just seemed very much not for myself or anybody like myself. My mom worked in office and, like, human resource at the time. My dad's been a fence builder since my sister was born. Science, all of it was very new to me. STEM was very new to me. I remember being in middle school taking a high school biology class and being so amazed with mitosis and meiosis and looking at them under microscopes. I just could not believe I was looking at something that was inside of you and what happened inside of you every single day. I realized that I really loved hands-on activity, and I did a lot of basic laboratory work. I did pipetting. I made agar plates. I was able to grow bacteria. I was just doing all sorts of stuff that, honestly, like, I didn't even know people did that. Going into how I got to where I am, I actually have a friend, and her name is Tulsi, and her brother was actually working towards going to medical school. And I told her, I was like, that sounds pretty cool, but I don't think I could ever do that. And she's like, Neve, she was like, you're the perfect person to be a doctor. Why stick to, like, being an athletic trainer? Why won't you be something beyond that? And she's like, and you're Native American. And she's like, do you know how many Native physicians are in the program? She's like, none. So I went home and I was like, what does it take to be a doctor? I searched it on the internet. I did my research and later found out that less than 1% of the American physicians are Native American or identify as Native American. And I was like, this makes so much sense because personally, I have never, I repeat, never met a Native doctor. So for me, I was like, this is crazy. Like, there needs to be more Native doctors. As far as moving to Minnesota, my uncle, the one that played basketball.
My name is Pete Nez.
He was the person that I talked to a lot about it. He was very much a father figure for me.
I moved away in 2002 from Arizona. You guys were so young. You know, like, I remember going to college when always stopping by to see you girls before I had left. Because you guys were like my kids. You're my nieces. But I see you as my own daughters also. And when you had first mentioned about coming down to Minnesota or to going to school, you know, I was very supportive and tried to offer or tell you about some schools that had tuition waivers and stuff like that.
And then one day I got an email from the University of Minnesota Rochester asking if I'd like to share my application for free. I did so. I didn't know where Rochester was. I had no idea what the school was all about. I just knew it was a new school and it was next to the Mayo Clinic and they only had 2 degrees to choose from, which is health sciences or health professions. And I told my uncle about it and he told me, he was like, oh, I've heard about that school.
I felt that if you stayed anywhere closer to home, it was so easy to give up. And that was one of my things about going to college, was that I had to leave or else I would have got stuck. So that was like the easiest decision for me, and I'm glad you made your decision of coming over too.
I remember telling my family when I was deciding to go to Minnesota that a lot of them didn't think that I could actually do it, and that a lot of them believed that I was going to lose myself. And not saying I agree with them, but I also was scared of that, and I think that's why I've made it a priority to remember who I am and continue to embrace my identity. I'd always try my best to return back to Arizona to be a part of different ceremonies. I was very much unaware of what diverse meant in the sense of Minnesota, because diverse for me back home was extensive. My graduating class was 350 students, and 100 of those students were Native American. Probably another 100 were of Hispanic descent, and the rest were white. So it was very much even playing field, and I always seen someone like myself all the time. And when I came here, it was like, I'm sure I'm going to meet so many Native students. But when I got here, that was not the case. And I remember talking to people, and they're like, oh, you're Native American? Like, that's pretty cool. Like, you're the first Native I've ever met. Like, and I was like, okay, this is a problem. Like, code red, this is a problem. Later to find out, I was like one of the 3 students that identified as Native American at my campus. And when I asked if they had like a Native American center, there was nothing. When I asked if they had any Native faculty, there was nothing. I asked for volunteer opportunities within Native communities, there was nothing. And I was shocked. There's no other way I can describe it but shocked. And I called my mom. I was like, Mom, I'm the only Native here. And so I ended up applying for a program called Native Americans into Medicine, which is actually through the University of Minnesota Duluth. It's like I hit a pot of gold. Like, I finally found
Native individuals who are interested in medicine, and I found this community that I longed for. I could actually stay at the University of Minnesota Rochester, but I'd also be part of a mentoring program.
We could talk forever, I think. You and I could.
The founder of this program is Dr. Mary Owen, who's a Klinglet physician. So for me, that was super inspiring.
You are not alone in your need to be connected to your community. So many students come from far away. Even if you're going to a local school, you're still not in your community for the most part, except for our tribal colleges, right? So that's number one, that connectedness. It has to be there. We are not individually driven, we're community driven. The statistics say that 1 in 3 of us is living in poverty. I would say that's probably more like 1 in 2. So that impacts the students who are coming to us. Like me, I was raised in 4 different trailer courts, 10 different homes. And also most of us are first generation. Our parents don't know how to guide us through the system. So we have to supply those resources that are the norm for 80% of the kids. 80% of kids in medical school come from families that have doctors or other highly educated folks in their families, right? So we have to provide the books. We have to help people remember how to study, given the environment of medical school, that it is that fire hose of information. You don't have to be brilliant, but you have to be able to organize quickly and take in tons of information. So when students aren't ready, we have to be able to help them do that. Students aren't always able to afford everything, even though you have these financial aid packages. More students in Native communities come in with debt load that's higher than other students. Native students also often come in wanting to help family members. That's just what you do. I've had medical students, Native medical students, who've worked jobs. One even worked 2 jobs to support family. So making sure that you're covering for the resources that you assume are there but often are not, because our families, our communities are living in much more dire circumstances for the most part. That's a generalization. So community, connectedness, resources that you don't often think of, having a safe place that they can go when they're hearing microaggressions and racism. They need to be able to go and talk with other people who help them so that they don't feel like they're losing their minds, that they're not off base, that what they heard was indeed something that wasn't appropriate. They shouldn't have to deal with it while they're trying to go to medical school or succeed in undergraduate school. Those are some of the key factors.
When I came to UMR, I felt like I was representing a whole community, and because I was representing a whole community, I felt like I needed to be like something like a family medicine doctor or a general surgeon or something that wasn't an orthopedic surgeon, because I felt like an orthopedic surgeon wasn't helping the majority of population.
Yeah, I would argue that if there's any place we really need natives in the specialty care, because we already know family docs are so nice, and for the most part, and pediatricians, the generalists are not as big a problem, right? But we need to see our faces everywhere. And to help those professions recognize that there are different models for health, right? You're going to bring to orthopedics this emphasis on community as far as healing and some more of our traditional beliefs, right? Respect, honor, humility, all of those.
Yeah, definitely.
Today I will be presenting my capstone, 2 Worlds, Walking the Path of Higher Education as an Indigenous Student and Health. Before I do so, I would also like to do a land acknowledgement, as the University of Minnesota Rochester is located on the homelands of the Dakota, Ho-Chunk, and other Native peoples.
You know, my time at UMR has been different than most people. I don't think people understand exactly who I am and where I come from, because this is a university centered around future healthcare professions. Cultural competency is super important, because not only are you serving people that look like you, but you're serving people that don't look like you. And, you know, healthcare is a system that was not designed for others to succeed. So, you know, essentially this university is the change for all that. And I think that's why it's so important for the students around me to learn more about who I am, who other people are, who refugees are, who people that are being overlooked are. They gave me the opportunity for my Hopi name to be said at graduation.
Neve Josh Mazy Rose Nez. Distinguished capstone.
Not gonna lie, like, I think it was pretty cool. And I think it just means that there's a lot more room for change than I thought here.
There was one moment where my chancellor came up to me and was like, we're going to miss you. Like, you have done so much for this university that, you know, you're not going to go unremembered. Like, one thing she asked me was if I was going to continue to be on the American Indian Advisory Board. She was like, because you jump-started this. That's a huge honor to know that I have that impact on people. But also to know that, like, I have left my mark here. I'm going to be honest. If you would have asked me a couple years ago, maybe even my first year of college, if I would graduate college, if I would make it, I probably would have said no. Like, there are multiple times that I believe that I did not belong here. Maybe I was making the wrong decision going into health. But, like, you know, everything I've done during college has really led me to feel that I belong. And, like, it's so crazy to think that, like, I have a degree. I have something nobody can take away from me. And it's amazing to know that I possess something that, you know, my family couldn't.
So these are our college stories. You've heard from Ruben Quito Stately, Archie Yellow, and me, Neve Nez. We're just three of 100,000 Native students across the country. So our stories don't represent everyone, not by a long shot. But one thing we hope you'll take away is the power of our resilience. We're speaking up when people don't know our stories, or that Native American people even exist. We're overcoming all kinds of barriers to be the first in our families to go to college. And we're finding a way to be successful in two worlds, to stand among our people and to stand in the larger society.